So I'm getting my first community service here at UCA because I was late for chapel. Can I get a round of applause for that? I'm excited. I didn't even know it was at 11:02, and even though I had plenty of good excuses and alibis, they told me that, you know, regardless, I was like, look, I'm in my dress code. Please do not give me community service, but this afternoon I'll be out doing something. I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm a little bit worried that they're going to give me, like, the job that nobody else wants. I'm not seeing my slides anywhere. And that would really help. Let me just share a moment from my heart here. As I shared with you on the first night, brave enough to believe, when I was a little boy, you know, before I knew that the world was a big, dark, scary place, and I was a sheltered kid being homeschooled and being raised in a Christian family, I had this dream that someday I was going to be just like my dad. You know, I would look at my dad and I'd just be like, I just want to be like you, Dad. And, you know, I look back now, and that story I told you a few nights ago when I was talking about being homeless for the first time in Olympia and having that dream that God gave me that, you know, someday that he really could use me to be an evangelist for him, to lead people to Jesus. And, you know, even having a dream that I played guitar before, I didn't even play guitar. And all of the miracles that had to happen, including my dad giving me a guitar and me actually learning how to play the thing. And there's like a whole plethora of stories I don't even have time to tell you about how God did miracles with me getting opportunities to play with people and learn from people and everything. But, you know, I have never in my entire life preached 9 times in 5 days at UCA, done a week of prayer anywhere. And I have to be honest with you, like, when Pastor John asked me to come here and do this, the thought in my mind was, bro, I don't think I can. You know, like, I'm leading a church of 590 people by myself as an associate pastor, straight out of school with no senior pastor. I have sermons, I have visiting, I have funerals, I have baptisms, I have all of this stuff. And then how am I ever going to be able to go to this school and talk to young people? And to be honest, the one thought in my mind was, man, I remember how I felt when I was in high school, when I was that age, and I had to go to church, and I had to listen to a pastor talk. I was usually sitting there thinking, when is this over? You know, like, whatever, dude, you don't have anything to say that's going to mean anything to me. And so, to be honest with you, I was absolutely terrified. I was scared to death. But, you know, I just decided to give this week to God and to pray for all of you. And I'm going to tell you something. This may have been my birthday week. I could have done anything with it. But being here this morning, realizing that we only have a few more times together before I will go on, continue following Jesus, and continue doing what he's called me to do with the rest of my life, that I'm always going to remember this moment at UCA. Because, you know, God calls me to go out there and lead people to Jesus. He asks me to let him bless me and to be a blessing. But you know what? I think that the person who's really received a blessing here this week at UCA is me. And so I just want to say thank you to all of you, because I will never forget you. I will never forget your songs. I will never forget those of you that have had the courage to come up and talk to me and just share your heart, your stories, what's happening in your life, being real. Because that's what life is all about. The thing I will remember most is what happened last night, as I sat in my office reading through responses. Response after response, people telling me about their lives and realizing that, you know what? I'm not the only one who's gone through struggles. I'm not the only one who's not sure about what tomorrow is going to bring or what the things that happened to me yesterday means for the rest of my life. We're all on a journey together, just trying to learn how to get through this life, keep our eyes on Jesus. So thank you, UCA, for touching my heart. The most exciting thing ever is, as I went through all of these slips, there were 9 people last night who made the decision that they wanted to recommit their lives to Jesus. There were 4 others who said, I want to take Bible studies. And friends, last night, right here in this church, 6 people made the decision that they want to be baptized and follow Jesus. Now, I won't lie to you. That's not the first time in my life that God has used me to be the person to lead someone to Jesus. There's been just a few before you, including this little girl who goes to my church. And I told you about her. Her name is Hannah. Every single time there's an altar call or anything happens, she's running to my office to slip her response card under the door. She's jumping over her dad to get out of the pew. He pretty much has to stop her and be like, no, honey, you have to wait until the altar call song starts. And I'm like, there's no wrong way, man. Let her go. Just run to Jesus, you know? But, you know, the thing that touches my heart is I know that those of you that made that decision to follow Jesus are on the beginning of a journey that's not only going to be a blessing to your life, but it's going to be something that God uses through you to be such a blessing to people around you. You know, I used to think that all of life was about becoming some kind of a great leader that people would follow. And that if you were really a leader, you could look behind yourself and you could see people following you. But now I know that truly being a leader is keeping your eyes so thoroughly fixed on Jesus that you're not worried if anyone's following you or not. Because friends, Jesus really is the only one worth following. So in 2 Corinthians 12, 9 and 10, it says, "And he said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, most gladly, I will rather boast in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in needs, in persecutions, in distresses for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong.'" Today, I'm not going to do a review like we've normally done. I just want to take a few minutes to tell you a story about how a guy, me, being in college, after having a dream that God would use me one day to lead people to Him, finally found out what it truly meant to be brave enough to follow. So, my freshman year at college reminded me a lot of when I first got put in public school. I didn't fit in. I was the older guy. I'd taken a 10-year prodigal journey, and here I was in college. I'll never forget going into Dean Thomas's office and interviewing to be one of the theology students at Walla Walla University. I'd been out of college for a long time. I'd only been in community college for a year and a half before I dropped out to be a volunteer pastor of a church. And so they wanted to talk to me and ask me questions about why I had decided that I wanted to go to college, and of all things, to be a theology major, and of all things, telling them that I felt like I had a call to pastoral ministry. I'll never forget as he questioned me and he said, "Stephen, is there anything else in the world that you would rather do other than theology? Because if there is, do it." I didn't understand why he was trying to talk me out of it. I was like, "Don't you want me to follow Jesus? Don't you want me to be a pastor? Don't you want me to follow the call that God has put on my life?" I'll never forget what I said to him as I stood in the doorway thinking that they were going to reject me and not let me be a part of the theology program at Walla Walla University. I stood in the doorway and suddenly a picture came to me in my mind. It was the story of Jesus with his 70 followers and his 12 disciples huddled around him when he was telling them that if they wanted to follow him, that they had to eat his body and drink his blood. Well, as you know, 70 of the followers were like, "Okay, this Jesus guy is getting a little bit too weird for me, so I think we're out of here." And then Jesus looked at his disciples and said, "Are you going to leave too?" Well, this is what I said to Dean Thomas. I said, "Dean Thomas, you know that story in the Bible? You know the part where the disciples are standing there and Jesus asks them if they're going to leave? Well, the only thing that I have to say to you today is that if I'm not going to follow Jesus and let him use my life, then I don't have anywhere else to go. This is it. This is my life. There isn't anything else. I can't imagine another degree. I can't imagine doing anything else with the rest of my life but following him, because Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life." I'll never forget when he cracked the smile on his face, and you could see, anyone who knows Dean Thomas knows when he's actually giving you a hard time, that he gets this little sparkle in his eye and he smiles, and then you know that the whole time he's just been grilling you and he didn't really mean it. He just wanted to see what you were going to say. And at that moment, I knew that I was going to get to be a theology major at Walla Walla University. I was incredibly excited. I was running all over campus, trying to apply for jobs, trying to get a position in ministry. I wanted to be a part of campus ministries. I wanted to be a part of ASU. I wanted to be a part of everything. I was totally stoked. My dream was finally coming true, and even though I was older than everyone else, to be honest with you, I felt like I was 21 plus tax. So, you know, I was just feeling great. And, you know, what happened next was kind of discouraging, because as I went around trying to get jobs, trying to get them to give me a chance to be in ministry at Walla Walla University, everybody kept telling me no. I couldn't be in campus ministries. I couldn't work for ASWU. No, we don't know who you are. We don't know what your gifts are. You can't get involved. It seemed like every door to traditional ministry at Walla Walla University was being slammed in my face. I was utterly discouraged. At that moment, I began to question why God had brought me to Walla Walla University. I mean, after all, I had been a volunteer pastor at a church for 2 years. I just had the amazing opportunity to go through the Arise Bible Worker Training School. And I had had the opportunity to work with David Ashrick to go door to door, give Bible studies to people, put on an entire evangelistic campaign, and even see entire families make the decision to follow Jesus and get baptized. And so here I was at Walla Walla University having people tell me, well, we're just not really sure you have a call. We need to get to know you. There's no jobs for you. You can't do anything. I found myself studying, you know, when you get into college at first, you're in general classes, okay? And so it has nothing to do with ministry. So my entire freshman year, I was studying for tests. It had nothing to do with Jesus. It had nothing to do with ministry. I was absolutely miserable. I was afraid I was going to fail all of my classes because I hadn't been through such rigorous education in a very long time. I mean, imagine being 10 years out of high school, not writing a paper or doing a homework assignment or a math problem for 10 years, and then suddenly being thrown into college and having 6 classes every single day and homework all night, only sleeping 4 hours a night and having everyone tell you that they're not going to let you do the one thing that you went to Walla Walla University to do. I was an absolute mess. I don't know if any of you feel that way here at UCA. You're here trying to find your place, but it just seems like, God, is this really where you want me? Well, I want to tell you a story about a girl that I met my freshman year. She was one of the bright spots in my life. I didn't even know her name. But every single time she saw me, she would walk by, she would ride by on her bike, and she would say, "Hey, Stephen, how are you doing today?" Now, you know how most people are when they ask you how you're doing? They're like, "Oh, how are you?" And then they just go by, and you like go to tell them, and you're like, "Bleh." And then they're gone, right? No, that wasn't this girl. This girl would come up with a big smile on her face, and even if she was riding her bike, getting ready to go off to do something with her day, she would stop, she remembered my name, she would smile at me, she would ask me what I was doing, and then she would even stop and wait to hear about my day. Regardless of where she had to be or if it was gonna make her late, and trust me, I can talk a lot, she would listen, she would smile, and she cared, and I could see it in her eyes. Now, the funny thing is I've always been terrible with names, and no, please don't come up to me afterwards, all 225 of you, and ask you if I remember your name, because I'm only going to be embarrassed and feel like a total idiot. So, every time this girl would come up to me, and she would talk to me and smile at me and remember what we talked about the last time and ask me how my week was doing and show that she really genuinely cared about me, I felt like a total idiot, and I never wanted to admit to her that I didn't know her name. This went on for like a year and a half. This girl always talked to me. Yeah, and I was just like too embarrassed to tell her that I couldn't remember, so I never did. And anyway, yeah, I know, I feel really silly now. But anyway, so this just went on and went on and went on and went on. And then finally my junior year came at Walla Walla University. I'm not going to tell you all of the story behind it because I only have a couple of minutes left. And I've already gotten in trouble a couple of times for being long-winded, but, well, not really in trouble, but anyway. So my junior year, I finally got a job with Campus Ministries. I'll never forget what it was like going on the retreat, getting to put on my jacket, and then we got to go out and meet with all of the other Campus Ministries leaders all over 13 universities in the North American division. It was amazing. I was having the time of my life, and yes, I was even brave enough to cry when I got my jacket because I didn't think that I was ever going to be accepted or fit in. But here God had led in my life He had taught me how to keep my eyes on him and lead people to him, and he'd even brought me to a place where he was giving me the desire of my heart to get to be a part of the things that I'd always dreamed of doing. Now, I want to tell you about this girl. Maybe some of you know who she is. Her name is Maddie. Maddie was one of the most amazing girls I've ever met. Everyone loved her. She wasn't popular because she was trying to be popular. She didn't have a million friends because she was worried about looking over her shoulder to see if she was a good leader. She wasn't worried about what people said about her or what people thought. She just genuinely cared and loved. Everywhere she went, she was always talking about Jesus. She was always trying to talk people into going to Camp Myvidin for the summer or on a mission trip or whatever. That was what Maddie was all about. She was all about Jesus. She was all about getting people to follow him. It was amazing. Well, my junior year, when we were coming back from our big retreat, it was the month of February. I'll never forget the day that it was, like, I believe it was a Monday. I saw Maddie that morning. She took off on her bike, and I went over to the Atlas. I walked out of the Atlas that day, and it seemed like the clouds were coming in, and for some reason, it just seemed like Walla Walla was a little more dark. And then suddenly the news broke all over campus that Maddie had been hit on a truck while riding her bike. Sorry. Here's a quote that Maddie wrote in her journal. I learned to stretch myself. I learned to stretch myself and realize that my weaknesses may one day become my strengths. Maddie knew she wasn't perfect, but she knew that in her weakness, if she kept her eyes on Jesus, that one day the weaknesses in her life would be her strengths. It was kind of crazy watching my best friend Timothy Oliver run all over campus as we all prayed that Maddie wouldn't pass away. Within hours, Aswu had made these pins that say Maddie Strong on them. They were all over campus, everyone was wearing them, and all of the chapels on campus were full of students. It was like we forgot that there was homework or tests, nothing else mattered except for praying for Maddie. Being the prayer coordinator on campus, one of my friends came to me and said, "Hey, Stephen, you need to go be with Timmy. I'm worried about him. He's knocking on all of the doors of all of the dorms, and he's telling everybody to come to the chapels and pray for Maddie and handing out Maddie pins. But he's been going like this for 5 or 6 hours straight without stopping. He won't eat. He won't listen to anyone. He won't think about anything else except for getting people to pray for Maddie." I'll never forget the night that I sat in that chapel with Timmy when we got the news. Sorry. I'll never forget holding my best friend while he cried for hours. And the reason we were crying is because Walla Walla University had lost a person that only cared about one thing, and that was following Jesus and teaching others to follow him. I made a commitment to myself that I would never forget the story of Maddie, and I'll never forget feeling like the one person who shouldn't be sharing my testimony about my memory of her at her memorial. But I stood up and I said, the one thing I'll always remember about Maddie is that Maddie knew my name. I wasn't the popular kid. I didn't have a job on campus ministries. Nobody really knew me. I was the old guy that didn't fit in. But Maddie knew my name. You know what? Maddie reminds me of somebody else that knows my name, Jesus. And he knows your name too. No matter how many times Pastor Farr fails you and forgets your name or doesn't know the talk that we had or whatever else, and my memory's never going to be as good as yours, Lord. God will always remember you. He knows everything about you, just like Maddie knew about something about everyone that she ever talked to. When I graduated from Walla Walla University, I decorated my graduation cap with little Maddie pins, except for we added something to her story, or we added something to these pins that weren't there the first time. Now there's a beautiful flower just like the ones that we placed on Maddie's mountain. And it says Maddie Strong on the front of the pin. But on the backside, it says, "We will never forget." You know, the reason that I will never forget Maddie is not because she was one of the most beautiful girls that I ever met, or because of her amazing smile, or that because she knew my name. But the more important reason I will never forget Maddie, and why thousands of people will never forget her, is because Maddie wasn't worried about whether people were following her or not. She just wanted to share people, share Jesus with everyone that she met. She let Jesus live through her. In Matthew chapter 4, 18 to 20, it says, "And Jesus, walking by the Sea of Galilee, saw two brothers, Simon called Peter and Andrew his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. Then he said to them, 'Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men.' They immediately left their nets and followed him." I used to think that someone was only a leader if they could look behind them and see people following them. But now I know that a true leader never looks back to see if people are following them, because they are too busy following Jesus and teaching others to follow him too. I used to think that in order to be a good leader, I had to get people to follow me. But now I know a good leader is someone who knows what it means to be brave enough to follow Jesus and teach others to follow him too. After all, Jesus is the only one who knows the way to the place where we all want to go. When we figure out that Jesus is not only the truth and the life, but that he really is the only way, that, my friends, is when you and I become brave enough to follow Jesus. You know, when I was talking to Maddie's mom yesterday, she had actually wanted to send me some stickers that I could give to people. And it really meant a lot to her to be able to get these stickers done and send them here so that I would have these stickers. And because of me changing the talk last night and changing the order of my talks and everything, I had to do the talk this morning, and I didn't even know that it was 11:02 that the talk was supposed to happen. But right when I walked in the door, running late, not even having my sermon finished or my slides done, and just trusting God to do this, one of the girls at this school walked up to me and handed me this envelope that wasn't supposed to get here until 5:00 tonight. And inside are the stickers that Maddie's mom sent that she'd like you to have an opportunity to have. So I guess I can just meet all of you at the door, and if you want to have one of these, and you want to remember someone that taught me how to follow Jesus, then every time you look at this sticker and the flower on it, you can remember that what it means to be brave enough to follow or to be strong is to realize, like Maddie said, that it's our weaknesses that we have right now that someday we'll look back and see are our treasures, because they're the thing that made us brave enough to follow Jesus. Amen.